Hello again, everybody. It is time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 49 tonight. I am Michael Citro from themainland.com, managing editor, and joining me, Daniel McGann, one of our columnists. Daniel, how you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. You know, I'm excited for a tough match this weekend. Wow, I mean, Sporting KC is going to be a fun one to watch. Unfortunately, we're not here in Orlando, but it's going to be a good weekend.
That was one of the better matches for Orlando City last year was when Sporting Kansas City came to town, and it was a 3-1 win for Orlando City, as I recall. And Adrian Venter had a good game. And you know, it's but before we go on and talk about Sporting Kansas City, which is a team we know pretty well, considering the fact that we've only played them once in MLS, we're going to look back at last weekend and see what happened with that Orlando City New York Red Bulls match. It ended up in a 1-1 draw. An early goal for Red Bulls. Basically, what happened was it looked like some folks in the back were not quite in position where they needed to be, and then Seb Hines was a little late responding to Bradley Wright Phillips, and Kleshchen puts the ball in behind him, and pretty easy finish for BWP, and it makes it 1-0. Pretty good high pressure from New York for the first probably third of the match, maybe quarter to a third of the match, and then Orlando City kind of settled down and got into the flow of the match and gave as good as they got. And maybe in some instances in the second half had some stretches where they were the better side, I'd say, and eventually getting a goal from Kevin Molino, his third goal in four games. It was nice to see him scoring. Actually tied Kyle Larin for the team lead in goals, and some good chances down the stretch, but then an untimely red card by Chris Nigita, and Orlando City not able to get the winner, and goes winless yet again, but stays undefeated at home.
Oh, that's great.
And the thing is, these were games last year, Daniel, that were losses, and then this year these tight back and forth games are ended up being draws, and it doesn't feel great. But if you think back to where this team was a year ago, you go, well, there is some improvement here. And, I think this was an opportunity or at least a performance that Orlando City can build on a little bit.
Yeah, but I feel like we've been saying that for the past few weeks now. I mean, it seems like Orlando either is getting a league, and then they're coming back and they're just ending up in a draw because of bad decisions or lackluster performances in the second half, or really a lot of different reasons, but a lot of it lending on to just, you know, horrible reffing as well. So there's got to be a point where we say we have to stop drawing and we have to start earning all 3 points and we have to start winning. And if we're not able to do that at home necessarily, a couple weeks from now, we may be talking about it being an upside right now, but a couple weeks from now, we could look back and say we're basically putting ourselves out of it with all these draws. So was the performance better? I think so. I think there are a lot of things that we still need to work on. Playing out of pressure is an extreme issue right now. I mean, it looks like teams have kind of found us to a fault in that aspect, because we want to play the ball out of the back, and we haven't been able to do it successfully as well as we would want to. At least we've made some adjustments. We looked better against the Red Bulls this time around, but we still weren't able to get the W. So, I mean, is it concerning right now that we're not able to pull 3 points out?
Concerning? It depends on. I mean, I think these were, especially the Red Bulls, I think they're a very good team, and they were in very fine form coming into this match. And, it was the return of Kaká, but maybe it's not quite up to speed yet. I think this is here's why I think it's an opportunity that they can build on, is because they finally had, you know, with the exception of Pedro Ribeiro and Luke Bowden, everybody was available.
Yeah.
We haven't seen a team this healthy since Orlando City's been in MLS. So this is an opportunity for the team to, if they can stay healthy and build on this performance and grow a little bit, I think that, you know, the results will come if they keep playing like this. And it really did feel like they were going to win the game and get that go-ahead goal at some point until that red card happened. It just, they had a couple of near misses and just weren't quite able to put that final ball in. But, I think one of the reasons for that, I don't think Kyle Larin was particularly sharp that night. But, you know, I think it's a promising performance. I thought that Nocerino had his best game since joining Orlando City. I mean, some of these European guys come over, very few of them step right in and do well right away. Sometimes it can take a full year for someone to integrate into the MLS, but it looked like Nocerino played better. He didn't have a great passing rate, but he did do a really nice job of helping mind the gaps in the back, and he protected Breck Shea, who Breck looked like he was very out of his element against Lloyd Sam in the first meeting and looked timid about going out and challenging him. And this was an opportunity for him to stay tucked in, and Nocerino came out and took the outside away. And Lloyd Sam was pretty quiet, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, Breck seemed to be lost upfield a few times trying to get a little bit too far forward. But like you said, with Nocerino, I thought even though his passing accuracy has been lackluster really since joining Orlando, I don't know if it's his touch or he was just not used to it yet or where his players are going to be. But his cover in this game was really effective. Whenever our outside backs were getting up, and he was able to close down those spaces, and really left a lot to be desired, not from Nocerino perspective, but from Breck's perspective in this game, and also what you said too with Kyle Larin. But I thought also Higuita had a fantastic game outside of that horrendous two-footed challenge just after another challenge. And
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Well, he's a $4.5 million dollar player, right? That's the word on the street.
Euros,
right now.
Euros, 4.5 million euros.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what that translates into right now, but I thought Higuita played pretty well until the red card. I thought Darwin Serrin had a really good game.
Oh yeah.
And I debated this with Austin because Austin did grades at the match on Friday, and I said I thought Darwin Serrin was man of the match for me, and he picked Molino.
Well,
and you know, not a bad pick. I told him that. I said, you know, I'm not knocking your pick. I think that, you know, Molino probably could have done a little more earlier in the game when he was trying to thread the ball through and not getting it there. And
he did put Laren on a clear chance, though. I mean,
he did, and he ended up with a good passing rate. He didn't. I think there was a point in the first half where his passing rate must have been fairly low because he was trying to, you know, put the perfect ball in, and it was just getting cut out every time. And but I thought that, for me, most of the team was pretty good. Yeah. I didn't think that Seb Hines was particularly great, and I didn't think Laren was good at all. In fact, for me, Laren was the poorest man on the pitch. And you know, it wasn't from lack of trying, but, you know, some nights you have it, some nights you don't. And he had a couple of really good opportunities. He had an early chip that he could have put the team up early, and he chipped it well over top of the net. I mean, wasn't even close. Yeah. And you know, maybe some of that's Luis Robles. You know, you try to be a little bit too perfect because you know you've got a good shot stopper back there. And you know, getting back to your point about Nocerino, I think certainly he's not known as a poor passer. So I think part of it is, you know, he's expecting guys to be in places they're not, and some of it is the surface. I'm sure he's not used to that. I mean, because they don't even train on that. They train on grass all week.
Yeah.
And then they go out and play on the artificial surface. So it's and I'm not trying to make excuses for him. I know people hate him and they want to call this a failed experiment, because I think whenever you can judge a guy on 9 games or less, I think you have to.
Yeah, but we have to remember also, though, I mean, we've seen a lot of players come into MLS from other leagues around the world and not really make their mark until either the latter half of the season or even their second run around. I mean, I'm not going to hold Nocerino to say that he's not talented. We know he's talented, right? He's got talent.
Sure.
Nobody's playing on the Italian national team as many times as he has that's not talented. But I'm interested to see if it necessarily travel? Is it necessarily just coming over to a different league? Is it playing on the surfaces? All these things probably coalescing together is causing this, but it looks like he's turning the corner now, right? It looks like he's getting more comfortable, and now it's just going to be communication and learning the players he's around. And with Higuita and Serrin playing as well as they have, if they keep those three in the midfield, there's a lot of cover for the rest of the players getting forward, and that's going to be interesting with the health and the depth that we have now with Venter and Molino and Kaká and Carlos Rivas and Kyle Lair. And I mean, you're talking a lot of different players that are going to be able to get in the attack, and you spoke to that bench that I was a little upset that we didn't use, and we didn't use it until the 88th minute after a red card. Were you surprised that we didn't use someone off the bench before then?
I was a little surprised that Laren wasn't subbed off. But I wasn't really surprised other than that because I had this same discussion with Brent, who was there, with covering the match as well. He did the five takeaways, but Brent and I were sitting there talking about exactly that topic. It's like, who would you take off right now? Because right now they're playing really well. Yeah. They're getting chances. You know, guys are getting forward in the attack. They're getting shots. Who would you take off? Who is not pulling their weight right now? And there really wasn't a lot to choose from. And I said, maybe you would take off Laren and put in Batista. Maybe you would sacrifice a central midfielder to bring on Venter because, they seem to be on the front foot. But that can always backfire on you, too, when you do something like that. Yeah. I just think Venter is a good, a hard enough worker that he would track back and that you wouldn't really lose that. Yeah. And there were guys that were, he was ready to bring in guys to go for it. And they were actually, taking off the penny and getting ready to check into the game.
Yeah.
And then you get the red card. So it kind of changed everything. And then he, what do you do then? You just bring on Carrasco and you try to, play some more direct balls over the top and see if you can steal the extra points. But, they were not able to do that. I think a lot of people see Carrasco come in and say that he's playing for the tie. But in all honesty, Carrasco is the best player on the team at playing the long ball from his defensive third. So, he's got a very good accurate outlet pass. And I think that it's not a concession. He's not conceding 2 points by bringing him on. It's like everybody's like, "Well, bring on Rivas. Bring on, Batista and Winter and go for it." And I'm like, well, that's all well and good, but the guys you had up front were playing pretty well, except for Laren. And I would have taken Laren off, but then, if that doesn't work, then people scream, "Oh, why'd you take off your best goal scorer?"
Yeah. I mean, what would you have done? What could you have done? There's a lot of different conversations there. I'm just like you. I'm a big Venter fan coming off the bench if he's available, because his work rate is second to none. He always seems to do something. You talked to Carrasco's long ball, right? That was Venter that got on the end of it. Earlier in the year. Yeah. So I would have been interested to see him come in, but Kyle Laren is, he's proved himself enough, even if he's having a bad game. Really, it's just one move and one shot for him to put something in the back of the net. So not knocking Adrian at all from that perspective, because whenever a team is playing as well as they were, they did look like they were in control in that second half, and they were running the ball down the field a good bit. It's hard to make that decision to take a guy that has the ability to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yep. So you already heard my man of the match was Darwin Serin. Who was your man of the match for New York Red Bulls?
For New York Red Bulls or against New York Red Bulls?
For the New York Red Bulls match. You know what I'm saying.
I have to go with Molino. I thought Darwin Serin had a great game, but Molino at the beginning of the year, it just seemed like he was a step off and his pass was a bit heavy or a bit light, or maybe he was making one too many. And now it seems like maybe he's not as hesitant as he was. He's still passing the ball a bit too much sometimes, and we saw that against the Red Bulls. But it looks a bit crisper, right? It looks like he's hitting his point more often than he was. And also, when you're putting the ball in the back of the net and you're in the right place at the right time, right? The last one against the Red Bulls was definitely right place at the right time. It's something that can definitely lead to more goals in the future, and I'm excited for Molino, and I just hope Laren gets back on the score sheet soon.
Yeah, that was a good run too by Molino. It was reminiscent of the week before at New England when Rivas started off in his own end and ended up scoring the goal. Yeah. But it's funny too because Laren didn't get an assist for setting up Rivas, basically the direct cross at New England. But he did get an assist for losing the ball in the box and having Molino, cleaned it up on a bad touch. So I guess that all evened out. It's a pity the bad calls haven't evened out yet.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, we had a penalty awarded and then taken away on Friday night as it was the AR was consulted and he called Hines offside. Now, we were later told that was an erroneous call and the penalty should have been given. By pro, but of course, pro gonna pro.
Stop. this has got to stop. Like, I feel like I'm just getting weighted down every week because it is now every week since the Philadelphia game that something has happened that pro has come on after and said, "Oh, that should not have happened." Yeah. And it's is it ever going to literally stop, or is it going to take
think it
for
will.
A different
I think,
team to come in the league to take it from
I,
us?
I think it's going to. I think it's going to either. It's either going to take more expansion teams coming in and then letting them take the brunt of this crap, or they're gonna decide we're gonna make it up to Orlando and it's all gonna take place in one game. It's gonna be like a 10-0.
We're gonna get 9 penalties in one.
Yeah,
game.
We're gonna get 9. Yeah, and they're gonna the other team's gonna get 5 guys sent off.
Kyle Aaron can just be offsides the entire game and it's perfect. Fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's all going to even out in one game. Oh, it's going to be amazing. Hopefully, if that happens, I hope it's against New York City.
I was actually about to say that. I hope that is when it happens. Or I hope that's the last game of the year that actually propels us into the playoffs, if needed. I will take that. If we get into the playoffs at the end of the year because they say, well, we have, you know, Orlando, we've basically stolen, what, like 10 points away from you over the past couple weeks. The last few games of the season, we're going to give 10 points back to you. And that's going to propel you into the playoffs. Perfectly fine, as long as it evens out. Right now, I don't feel like it's evening out for us.
It's not going to even out. It's not. I don't see it evening out. There's just too much. It's just too lopsided. So another thing that happened, speaking of great decisions, Adrian Heath ran a few feet out on the field to retrieve a second ball that the ball boy had thrown in, and there were two balls on the pitch. During a stoppage in play, the ball was out of bounds, getting ready for a throw-in. Second ball came on the pitch. And Adrian Heath, saw it, reacted to it, grabbed the ball, threw it back off, and immediately scampered off the field. But that is worth a one-game ban to MLS Disciplinary Committee because there is a zero tolerance, Daniel. Zero tolerance on stepping onto the field unless you're medical or you're a player that's legally, supposed to be on the pitch. So what MLS is basically saying is that a dangerous tackle that gets you a suspension for one game, like we saw with Kikuta Mane and Chris Rolfe last week. Chris Rolfe could have wrecked the guy's knee and ruined his career, but it's the exact same penalty for going out and getting the extra ball off the field.
Well, a few things here, Michael. Pro's going to pro, and MLS is going to MLS in every facet. I mean, that's what they do. They just – everything's off the books with them. Nobody knows why they do certain things, but – Adrian was definitely more than just 3 or 4 feet on the field. He took like 3 to 4 trot slash scampers onto the field to get in there. It looked like a good 10 to 15 feet for me. And everybody should know that you shouldn't come onto the field to play like that, no matter if it's the dying and waning moments of a game or not. Is it a one-game suspension? I don't know. Should it be a fine? Probably. But MLS needs to... They're just trying to be clear and concise on this, right? Because we've seen suspensions handed out before this year for coming onto the field. I mean, Notarino got one on a goal score.
Yeah, Notarino got one. He took about 3 or 4 steps out and gave a big hug to Molino during a stoppage.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem if you're going to find a guy for, find a guy for that, and it shouldn't even be a big fine because come on, what is he doing that's wrong? He didn't come out to confront anybody. He's not being unsportsmanlike. It was a moment of passion, and this game is all about passion, and it shouldn't be punished. But you don't necessarily encourage it. If you don't want him to do that, you slap a $1,000 fine on him, and he goes, "Oh man, well I probably shouldn't do that again." But with the Olsen thing, people say, "Well, he's dumb because Ben Olsen from DC United got the same penalty earlier in the year." Do you honestly think in the heat of the battle when you're managing and you got an important throw in coming and you're trying to think ahead what you're going to do, what chess pieces you're going to move? Do you really think he's thinking about Ben Olsen at that point?
I honestly don't think Adrian cares one point or the other. I mean, he's going to make that decision. He's a very passionate guy. We all know that. But MLS has to stick by their guns on this side. I'm not agreeing with MLS that it needs to be a one-game suspension. I'm agreeing with the fact that they've started the year off with this rule, and they're not only holding coaches and managers accountable, but they're holding players accountable. And as long as you can have that type of consistency, that's all I want to see. And if we can get this consistency from pro, then maybe we won't have other issues as well. But at least MLS is being consistent in this facet. Not saying they're right, but they're being consistent.
Yeah. All right. I just watched it just now. Just now I watched it. Again. I'm going to say at most he took 4 steps onto the pitch.
I mean, Adrian's only 5'8"?
he's a little guy and he took about 4 steps.
Okay.
It's okay. I get where you want to be consistent. But let's not be consistently stupid. This is a stupid, stupid suspension. You're saying, you know, you cannot be on the pitch to manage your team. I mean, that is a huge penalty for what the offense is. And like I said, you know, I did my open letter today to the MLS Disco, and my really outlandish example was, okay, let's say New York City FC's playing, and somebody gets hurt and comes off, and the medical staff is paying attention to this guy, and then, you know, Andrea Pirlo goes down, he collapses. He's like 5 yards from Patrick Vieira, who knows CPR, but if he goes out on the pitch to save the guy's life, he's going to get a one-game suspension.
Got to be consistent, Michael.
it's just a stupid thing to say you can never, ever do it. The zero tolerance thing is what gets me. You can tell there's no intent on Olsen or Heath's part to do anything unsportsmanlike, to be confrontational. They're actually being helpful and saying, let's keep this thing moving and not, you know, have to blow the whistle and stand around some more. It just is – it's ridiculous that they can't – you know, and obviously once they do it to Olsen, they got to do it to everybody. But they should have never done it to Olsen is my point.
Yeah, and I mean, I do agree with you about the stupidity of the rule, right? But I only agree on the consistency. Once you start down that road, you have to kind of continue down it. And if you don't, then, you know, everyone's going to cry foul because you're not being consistent. So it's one way or the other. And I would always take the consistency, even if it is a stupid rule, because you can change that rule in the future. And I'm just looking for consistency at MLS and something, because we all know that there's not much within MLS or the refereeing organization right now. And anywhere I can get it, I'm going to take it.
All right. Well, let's move on before I blow a gasket and talk a little bit about Orlando Pride getting back to 500 with a 2-0 victory over Seattle Reign. You know, you had an early goal there by Sarah Hagen, set up by a nice cross from Alex Morgan at the back post. Hope Solo was amazing for the Reign. Wow. She kept them in the game probably a lot longer than they should have been. And eventually Leanne Sanderson jumped on the rebound of a saved Morgan shot that Hope Solo got on a piece of but couldn't control the rebound. And Sanderson put it home and made it 2-0. But it really never felt that the Reign were in that game. They had one opportunity to draw level when Laura Alloway let the ball get too far off her foot. She had a heavy touch and it went right to a Reign player who chipped it long. And man, what a great job by Ashlyn Harris to scramble back and tap it off the bar. And it was really the only time that Ashlyn Harris was called into action the whole game. It was by far the most complete game you would see from the Reign, or I'm sorry, for the Pride so far. And Kim Little, the Reign's you know, do everything player, was very quiet.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Orlando just basically dominated the match. I was very surprised how Hope Solo was having such a great match. I thought she was going to save that rebounded chance by Sanderson, and it actually, I couldn't tell, but it looked like she may have got a part of her glove on that, because it slowed down when Sanderson shot it through that little opening after the rebound. But overall, it looks like Orlando's going to be a force to be reckoned with in this league, especially at home. There was a little bit of dip in attendance, of course, from the previous matches, and hopefully we can you know, rally around the wins that we're seeing at home and bring a few more people in. But even with a little bit of attendance, if we're still, what was it, around 8,500 or something like that for the attendance, which is really strong.
Yeah, it was over 8,000. In fact, it was more than the other two Mother's Day games combined.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and I think Mother's Day was a big part of that. I think I'm going to anticipate around, at the end of the year, the average is going to be around 10 or 11,000, I think, just because of that big opening day.
Yeah.
So there's going to be some crowds that are smaller than that one, but there's going to be a few that are bigger than that one as well, I think. And I think Mother's Day hurt them. But again, it was interesting to see that they had twice the, you know, they had enough attendance that they had more people at the Camping World Stadium, I guess we're calling it now, than the other two NWSL games combined had. So that was a good sign. And I think that this community is embracing women's soccer. They're embracing this team, and I think they're going to be fun to watch. And watch out the rest of NWSL, because it looks like the back four have gotten, you know, linked up and they know what each other is doing. Because I thought it was a really good game for Monica, really good game for Steph Catley and Jose Belanger as well.
Steph Catley, it just is on another planet. I mean, she's so good in this league. It's surprising how I mean, she gets up and down the pitch. She gets back on defense. She puts great balls into the box, and she doesn't shy away from scoring goals either. But I'm surprised about a player that we've talked about a few times already, in Jasmine Spencer, and her sitting underneath Alex Morgan. I know there were a few times where her shots were completely off the mark, and they've been that way so far this season. But I think when she turns the corner with that speed and the type of energy and drive that she has, I mean, she looks like a combination of Adrian Venter on the men's side with some Carlos Rivas in there with that speed. But I mean, she doesn't stop. It's the entire match. She's running as fast as anyone else or faster than everyone else on the pitch. And I'm excited to see also Sarah Hagen getting in there as well, right? She looked a bit rusty at some times, but she looked like she understood where Alex Morgan was going to be. And that type of relationship can only become better with time. And then, of course, Leanne Sanderson, who her passing and her ability to find open space is really going to put Alex Morgan in a lot of good positions moving forward.
Yeah, she's really calm on the ball. Yeah. She reminds me a lot the way she pulls the strings. She reminds me a lot of Kaká on the men's side. She'll be able to turn slowly, survey the field, play the perfect ball.
Yeah.
She does a really nice job with that. Plus, she's scoring goals and taking some heat off of Alex Morgan. And that was always going to be the key, is if you get people going, like, you know, you get goals from Sanderson, you get goals from Hagen, you maybe get Spencer going and maybe get the occasional goal from the fullbacks. I think you're going to see Alex Morgan really shine, because, you know, now you can't just take her out of the game and be okay. You have to – now you have all these other threats. And, you know, teams will still probably say, well, we'll live or die with trying to make other people beat us. But, you know, if that's happening, you know, it's just human nature. You're going to be like, okay, I can't quite cheat as much as I was.
Yeah.
And that's when Alex Morgan gets that one extra step and she kills you with it. So I think it was a great outing. It was nice to see that it was a pretty decent attended game. It was a really nice day, and you know, the fact that it was Mother's Day probably kept some people away. But it was a good performance by Tom Sormani's crew.
Yeah, do you think Tom is running these different starting 11s which we've seen for all the matches now? Is he doing that on purpose because of the Olympics, trying to get as many people in form and in game form, playing with a lot of different women on the pitch, because we're going to have so many different players missing during the Olympics? Do you think that's an idea of his?
It might play into it some. I know he's been saying that he wanted to get Cammy Levin and Tony Presley on the pitch. He was able to get Cammy Levin some minutes. I think it's more that he still doesn't know what his best lineup is, because, let's face it, I mean, NWSL has like almost zero preseason.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a lot of that preseason, a lot of his star players weren't there. So you're playing these colleges and you're not really getting a full, you know, good view of what you've got, because, I mean, you went out, what'd they win the first one? 8-0.
Yeah. Well, I think we can agree that Leanne Sanderson needs to be in the starting 11. I mean, when she's in that, on the field, she calms everything down and allows for Orlando to hold on to the ball. I've noticed when she's not on the pitch, and we saw it for the first couple of games where she wasn't starting, we seem not to hold possession as well, because we weren't finding that open space and allowing our players that have a lot of speed to run onto the ball in that open space. And when she comes in, we start doing exactly that. I don't know if it was because she came in later in the training. She wasn't able to play those preseason matches that you were just talking to as much, but she brings that calm ability onto the ball, and we just seem like a different team when she's on the field.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that there was some talk from Sormani that she wasn't quite up to fitness where he wanted her to play 90 minutes, and so she wasn't starting those games. She was coming in the second half. A player that really surprised me in a pleasant way was Sam Wideman, the first round pick for the Pride. I thought she had a great first start. It was her first NWSL start, and she really created some problems for Seattle Reign. Did a great job winning the ball back in the midfield, it really looks like this is a solid team that, when they start really clicking and gelling together, are going to be a formidable club in NWSL. And what's, you know, because of the the season is so few games, they're already 20% of the way through the season. So it's good that they're starting to round into shape. Now, yeah, they're going to be missing some players for the Olympics, but so are a lot of the other teams. So it is important to start getting the Tony Presleys and the Cammy Levins out there and get them some competitive minutes. But to do that, you have to have, certain game situations, and the team's either going to have to be way ahead or way behind to start tinkering.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is we have so many good players on this roster, so many international players on this roster that if it is a close match, I mean, it's hard to take off the type of players that you were talking to of Alex Morgan or Sarah Hagen or any of our defenders, really. I mean, surprisingly, our entire back line are international stars and are showing that after this game. I mean, that back line really started to gel, and whenever you have that back line in front of Ashlyn Harris playing that well, it's going to be really hard, even for a good Seattle team, to start putting shots on goal. It's surprising how quick they gelled after that first match with Portland. It looks like there was a lot of indecision back there. Outside of Seth Catley getting forward, there wasn't a lot. There were some communication errors. We saw those. They weren't coming up as a defensive line when they should have, but they started to gel really quickly, and I think that talks to not only their ability, but the ability of those international players playing so many matches to communicate.
Yeah, well, it was a great outing for the Pride, now 2-2 on the season. Orlando City B got a draw on the weekend, so that was kind of cool. It was interesting because the back line of Orlando City B consisted of Luke Bowden, Tyler Turner, Devron Garcia, so three, guys basically with MLS potential there, and Earl Edwards Jr. was the keeper. So OCB goes out. They actually fell behind 2-0 and came back and drew 2-2, but they had an opportunity to do much better than that because they were up a man, because for a change, the other team had the red card over the weekend and not OCB. So not able to take full advantage of that, but a point is pretty good considering what the kind of results that OCB's been getting this year.
Well, I mean, you're forgetting about Connor Donovan? You're saying he doesn't have...
Oh, yeah. Condon started the game. Yeah. He started the game. He played the first half, yeah. I certainly didn't mean to slight a former podcast guest.
I mean, I definitely think he has MLS ability. I mean...
Absolutely.
Especially coming back for injury, it's good seeing him getting some minutes... and starting the match there with OCB, and hopefully he's able to roll into form. And I mean, I don't see him rolling into form after such an injury like that last year quickly. Let's say at that, right? We know those injuries, especially the knees, are hard to come back from. But it's really exciting seeing him getting some minutes with the OCB side.
Yeah, and it's every minute that he plays, and that knee gets stronger and he gets more back to fitness. It's good to see, not only because, you hate to see kids get hurt, but the other thing is, if he wasn't getting closer to coming back, I just don't think that Aurelien Collin deal gets made. I think that part of that deal was that, look, we got Connor Donovan coming back soon, and he was ahead of Tommy Redding last year.
Yeah, well, Tommy's played really well this year, so.
Yeah, and Tommy's played well this year, so here you got a guy who was ahead of him. So I think you're okay at center back if you get Connor Donovan healthy and back to fitness. So that allowed you to move Collin's salary and clear an international slot, and so that we can bring in Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Yeah, you were it's good moving Collin, considering we know he's a penalty giving away machine, and that did occur last week against the Red Bulls, but unfortunately it was called off.
Exactly. I almost called that. It would have been perfect. And then, and of course, he did get a yellow card, and he darn near got a second yellow card. He was kind of lucky not to get a second.
I believe that was a second yellow as well. But we won't talk to Pro any more than we've already talked to Pro. So
let's move on. We're going to, I think we've covered this weekend, pretty thoroughly. And so we're going to change gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about the future and the future of MLS. And so we've got some friends that are going to tell us a little bit about Atlanta United FC coming up right after this. Mm-hmm. Joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week is Eric Quintana. He's a contributing writer for Dirty South Soccer, the SB Nation blog that will be covering Atlanta United. And also, he's the host of Mouths of the South podcast. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good, doing good. A little weird being on this side as opposed to where you guys are right now asking the questions, you know?
That's right. You don't have to, you know, do any editing or anything tonight.
Just sit back and talk. That's it.
That's right. Eric, I wanted to just for starters, get your take on what's going on in Atlanta in terms of the excitement level of MLS coming there and you know, what type of atmosphere is present and you know, what's the vibe, I guess?
I think for the most part, everyone is most of the people are just extremely excited that they have MLS soccer in Atlanta. I know it's been there was talk that they would come in, I think, 2007, and that never happened. I think the whole thing was that they didn't want to. It could have been that they didn't want to do a soccer specific stadium and then go ahead and do another Falcon stadium. So combining the two is just kind of part of the deal. But for the most, everyone's excited. You've got a small faction of people that that aren't so happy about it, specifically when it comes to what happened with the Silverbacks and how they were essentially suspended for a little bit, and then they had to drop down to NPSL, and so they're obviously not happy about that. But that is a small sliver of the Atlanta soccer, you know, community that is really upset about that. I mean, they're pretty vocal on Twitter and whatnot, but not as, you know, I would say 90% of the people are just, when is 2017 going to get here? Because we're super excited. We're happy with everything they're doing. You know, the training facility and the academy has kind of gotten underway, and everyone's pretty stoked about that. On our podcast, we've had Matt Doyle and Paul Tenorio on just to talk about, you know, how influential and how impactful that is across MLS to you know, be spending. You know, we saw RSL come out and spend, you know, say they were going to spend $45 to $50 million on their training facility, and then 2 weeks later, Atlanta United announces they're going to spend $60 million. So we understand that we are setting ourselves up to be as successful in year one as we possibly can. Now, with the history of expansion teams, you know, who knows what will happen, but you know, everyone's really excited. Everyone's looking forward to 2017. Everyone's looking to the first signings, the first DP signings, and you know, the first head coach.
Yeah, Eric, talking a little bit about Atlanta coming in. I know Orlando came in new, right? We're now in our second year in MLS, and we had that same type of feeling where the city started to just have a beat to soccer and football. You started seeing our magnets around the town and whatnot, and Atlanta just announcing that huge United showcases world-class training ground. I mean, $60 million. Have you seen those announcements make an impact throughout the community, and not only just Atlanta, but Marietta and those surrounding areas as well?
You have. I know Marietta's excited. I know that they're excited to be able to, you know, especially it's a, you know, money-driven area. It's very affluent, and they're excited to be able to be the home of the academy, essentially. And, you know, it's you see people really getting amped up to even go and just check that out. You know, I'm waiting for, I'm sure there'll be people there waiting to see if they can't, you know, take part in the, you know, in the what is it, the shovel ceremony or whatever it's called. And, you know,
groundbreaking
ceremony. You know, you have people that are you know, we're constantly getting pictures of the new stadium. And so people are, again, really excited. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but they're really excited about what's going on. And, you know, you see that in the amount of, obviously, the season ticket support, the season ticket sales. That's where, you know, I think we've seen the most tangible thing that shows people are getting into it. I see so many Atlanta United, the magnets and the hats, and you know, every time they throw something up on the in the Atlanta United store, you know, on MLS soccer, it usually it's the hats that are sold out in about a week. So to say people are excited is definitely an understatement.
So obviously Atlanta's a city that's had some issues with at least with hockey. What's different about soccer that is seems to be capturing the imaginations there?
With the Thrashers, I don't. It's funny because I never thought of Atlanta as a soccer, as a hockey town. And you know, they had kind of like just a bad business model in general. They didn't do very well when it came to marketing. You know, they had a really good opportunity to. You look at the ECHL team in Gwinnett that they have now, and they do a great job of, you know, getting what they get. I think it's something around 4,000 to 5,000 people a night on average, and you know, that's because of how they market. You know, the local feel they have, you know, regarding their hockey team, and that just, you never got that with the Thrashers. With Atlanta United, it's you already have a large number of families and a huge number of people that love soccer, and they've just been waiting for, you know, that top tier level club to join MLS, or they've been waiting for that announcement. I don't know why the Silver. I think it was more the Silverbacks problem that never became a thing, because of their management, to be quite honest, and the fact that they did a horrible job marketing that team to the local residents, even where they're situated. They're situated where literally everyone can see them. The way they're located in Atlanta, everyone going to work, coming from work, knows exactly where the Silverback complex, where Silverbacks Park is, and yet no one went to their games, or not enough people went to their games to actually create a serious culture around that team. And so that comes down to that marketing. It's not that we didn't care. It's that a lot of people just, I honestly think they didn't know. I know that's the one thing that's changing with Atlanta United is, and we get a lot of flack from you know, the hardcore Silverbacks fans, is that all of a sudden MLS comes to town and we're all soccer fans. Well, it's because we know that it's there. You know, they do a good job of just presenting themselves in the community, and they want to be part. They want to grow the soccer culture in Atlanta, and so that's a big thing about Atlanta United that everyone loves. You already have a ton of families and kids that play soccer. It's not only in Atlanta; it's also in Alabama and the surrounding states, because we've seen the season ticket sales. Well, we haven't seen anything, but we've been told from the front office that they're a large portion of season ticket sales that are coming from the surrounding states of Georgia that are waiting for, you know, a big team to come root for.
Yeah, Eric, you know, one difference I see between the other franchises that have come and gone in Atlanta and this one for Atlanta United FC is Arthur Blank. And Arthur Blank is willing to spend money. I mean, he also owns the Atlanta Falcons, co-founder of Home Depot. And you have this Mercedes Benz Stadium that looks like something out of some kind of futuristic novel or movie. I mean, it's Blade Runner-esque. This thing is going to be amazing, and everyone's going to know where it's going to be at. I think you guys are going to sit around 30,000, even though the stadium is supposedly, you know, up to 80,000 or somewhere there. But they're going to confine it down for the soccer aspect. Are you excited to have Arthur Blank in there? And also speak a little bit to Carlos Bocanegra, because that's a technical director that not only knows the league, but knows the landscape in North America soccer.
Yeah, Arthur Blank, I'm excited that it's someone that is, his kids play soccer. So that alone doesn't say much. But the fact that, you know, he has hired the people that he's hired, and that he is willing to spend the money that he's spending, invest in the right people, in the academy, in the training facility. I know that it's the stadium is going to be shared with the Falcons, but it's not just the Falcons stadium and Atlanta United is going to be playing in it. It is equally the Falcons and Atlanta United stadium. They're throwing a media presser on Monday, to kind of show the fan experience and to just kind of sell the digs and you know, basically sell it to the fans, and it included all the Atlanta Falcons media and all the Atlanta United media. And that's how they've done it since day one. So I'm happy that it's someone. I mean, we could have easily gone down the Robert Kraft, you know, path, which we know what that's like with the Revs. It's not good.
No.
You know, in their stadium, I was actually just – I just wrote something – I think it's coming out tomorrow with for Dirty South Soccer that basically explains that, you know, they're viewed as cheap. They're viewed as, you know, that it's just kind of like a pet project. You walk into Gillette Stadium, you don't see any Rev stuff. It's clearly the Revs playing in Gillette Stadium in the home of the Patriots. So mm-hmm. That's not the case in Atlanta. You don't get that feel in Atlanta. You get someone that's dedicated to making sure that this is a success, not only in MLS, but I have a feeling that this is it, the way they speak about, you know, being you know, kind of their influence globally, because it's just a global game. I have a feeling that they're going to be at least attempting to, maybe not year one, but throughout there in the short term, maybe year 3, 4, and 5, they're going to be pushing hard to try to get into the Champions League, to try to bring in international friendlies, you know, with the big European clubs, with big names, and try to legitimately compete with them, so that it's not just a let's get the ticket sales, you know, let's get the revenue from the ticket sales by bringing in, you know, a Barcelona, Real Madrid. I'm not saying those are the teams they're going to bring in, but I'm just – those are just examples. So that is because Arthur Blank is willing to spend the kind of money and put the dedication towards Atlanta United. So
Eric, I'm no, sorry. Go ahead and finish your thought. I was going to say this is obviously going to be a potential major rivalry between Atlanta and Orlando City.
I don't think it's potential.
I just think it's potentially one of the like it, right. This could become the biggest, you know, MLS rivalry in a pretty short amount of time. We've already seen a little bit of gamesmanship on the part of Atlanta there with the scarf incident, putting the Atlanta scarf over the ILF scarf. You know, how calculated do you think some of the stuff that we've seen, you know, is with the Atlanta ownership?
Was specifically Scarfgate?
Yeah.
I think it was absolutely intentional. I think
I agree.
There's some history there that I don't know if a lot of people know, but it was, I guess they went to, I forget if it was a Battery game where they were playing, you know, maybe Orlando City B. I think it was 2014. Terminus Legion knows the story better than I do, but basically what happened is that there were pictures taken with, I guess, the Terminus Legion flag upside down, and it was clearly ILF, and it was they put it all over social media and everything like that, and Darren Eales and I think Carlos and some of the people that had already been hired for Atlanta United were there with Terminus Legion, so they saw their opportunity and kind of went with it. And I mean, it's pretty obvious from the pictures. I mean, they clearly show, I think it's like three pictures. The first one with just the Terminus or with the Atlanta United scarf. The second one clearly showing you that the ILF scarf is underneath what will be basically they're going to put it over the ILF scarf. So, I mean, it's not
right.
It was pretty obvious. The club hasn't actually, you know, Darren Eales or Carlos or anyone in the front office hasn't really spoken about it, and we haven't really asked. But yeah, I thought it was intentional. But I love that kind of stuff. I love the fact that Orlando City fans are already on our case about, you know, killing off the Silverbacks and you know, being plastic fan, all that stuff. I love it because eventually when we beat you guys 4-0 and in the regular season, you know, we're gonna be the one with the last laugh.
Wow! All
right. Wow. We're looking forward to 2050 also.
Wow! You got to step on the field first, Eric. I like this. I mean, I don't even think Mercedes-Benz Stadium's finished yet. I mean, come on. That's awesome, though. I mean, a good healthy competition, especially in the South.
Absolutely.
There's not a lot of soccer down here, right? Right now, we have Orlando, and really, that's it. And it's good to see Atlanta getting up in the fold, and not only that, but having a strong ownership group and having those type of directors like Carlos Bocanegra that I was speaking to earlier. But when we came in the league, Orlando, we were emulating other clubs, and we looked at Portland because of the size of the city, the type of the type of fan engagement that we thought we'd be able to see in Orlando. What is Atlanta? What are they going to try to emulate? What kind of current MLS team do they see themselves as a comparison to? Of course, they're going to always compare themselves to Orlando, but outside of that out there, what do they see themselves as right now?
I think when it comes to expansion teams, they're looking at I want to say that they're looking at the Orlando City model. That's all, like you said, based off Portland. I think Portland's the, you know, the gold standard, if you will, just because of their supporters and the way they've grown and the way they got up to MLS and everything like that. but in the most recent history, there's Orlando City and there's NYCFC. And I think if most fans could choose, they're going to choose Orlando City for obvious reasons.
Good choice there.
When I talk to Darren Eales, when I talk to Carlos, I don't get the sense that they want to just, you know, emulate MLS clubs. They want to, again, they speak to kind of this global influence. And I don't want to speak too broadly as to, you know, they want to rule the world. There's nothing like that. But they just want to be able to be a name like Real Madrid and Barcelona are in Spain, or
sure,
Bayern Munich is in Germany, or, you know, anything like that. Or, you know, the Rangers are in Scotland. They want to be a global name that just happens to play in MLS. And that's the feel you get from, they obviously want to succeed within MLS. I don't want to discredit that, but with the academy, the way they set up, the people they're hiring, it gives me a sense that they're not just thinking domestic. That's a priority. Again, I don't want to undersell that, but it's a priority. But it's they're hiring. They've got MLS talent, or they've got MLS experience. They've got international experience. They've got, you know, European or English talent, youth development experience. They've made these hires that make me think they. It's more than just MLS for them. That's a big part of it. That is obviously the number one, but they also want to branch out and compete in Champions League and you know, again, invite the big clubs to either train and do you know, international friendlies with here and you know, be able to sell it more than just hey, we want to, you know, pick up the revenue for that. I know I already said that, but
no, it's good. It sounds exactly like the Orlando model. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, like, you know, that's the same, all the same buzzwords. You know, they want to be a global brand. They want to, you know, have that kind of reach, and they want to, you know, they have the partnership here with Stoke City. So they've already, you know, partnered with them and with Benfica and all of that stuff. So, you know, it's good to see that Atlanta's building things that way. Oh, by the way, I don't really appreciate you bringing up the Rangers since I'm a Celtic fan, but we'll move on. So, you know, Atlanta United, how much really is this United thing bothering people there? Because it seems to be bothering people on social media. I know it's bothering the Minnesota folks who are like, now we think we're going to have to change our name, and we've always been Minnesota United, and now we're going to have to change our name. I mean, what do you make of all of that?
A lot of people didn't. I think a lot of people are over it, and they've accepted it, and, you know, as much as they might want to, it's not going to change. I look at the what I call United Gate, and I don't see it being an issue for Atlanta. I see it as an MLS issue. I see it as a league issue. And Minnesota just happens to be the one that's going to, you know, get hurt the most. Here's my argument is that the way the academy is set up or going to be set up, we're going to be pulling, theoretically, we'll be pulling talent from Alabama and, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and who knows where else within the Southeast, because of the what I think will be the plans of the academy in the future. You also look at the season ticket sales that we got from the surrounding states, and you think the same thing. Like, look, you guys might have united a couple cities. We're uniting the entire Southeast. So I don't want to undersell that either. I want to be able to say, yeah, look, we are doing something different that hasn't been done in MLS before. So I'm with Darren Eales always says that it's a ubiquitous name. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't belong to anyone. You know, there's a million Uniteds out there. You know, would I have liked maybe a different name? Yeah, maybe. But I'm fine with Atlanta United FC. I'm didn't have a problem with it to begin with. I remember a funny thing at the logo and I guess the name unveiling, although the name had already been kind of released. I think Rachel Bonetta was there and she said something to the effect of, you know, we'll be starting in 5 minutes, and someone in the back yelled, you got 5 minutes to change the name. which I thought was funny. But at the same time, I'm like, come on, you're not changing it. Just you're not gonna. They made the decision. They based the decision off what the fans wanted. You know, this is what you guys chose. Don't get mad now that that's what it is. You know, would I've liked something? I asked Matt Doyle this when we had him on, and he basically said, you know, yeah, no, I hate the name. I hate it. I think you guys are the bad guys when it comes to Minnesota. You got so much history in Atlanta. You could have easily gone with something else. And I agree that there is a lot of history, but there is the aspect of we're not just while it is Atlanta United FC and it is based in Atlanta, we are doing a lot to recruit. Well, I think there's going to be a huge influence in the surrounding states that will be uniting them to Atlanta and the club.
So Eric, you know, you're under a year away, right? I mean, the anticipation is building. You know, there's targets that are probably set out there for Atlanta United, and Orlando happened to get 60,000 plus, not only in its first iteration last year, but this year as well for opening day matches. And we were second in attendance last year, just behind Seattle. What is Atlanta targeting from that side? And do you see what kind of season ticket holder numbers do you guys see going forward in the season? What's the targets that you expect to be there for season tickets?
Well, I'm sure you guys have heard the either 25,000 or 29,000 number of season ticket deposits. And from what we understand, basically the only people that aren't converting those deposits into actual season tickets are the people that might have left the Atlanta area and moved to other states. They keep telling us, they haven't given us a number, which I'm constantly hammering them about every time I see them, because I'm very curious as to what that looks like right now. Especially 10 months out and we still haven't hired a manager or any designated players, nor have the rumors. We haven't released a kit, nothing. We basically still have a shell of a team and we're sitting at 30,000. He has said recently that we exceeded 30,000 season ticket deposits. Wow. And if you get 80% of that, that's about 25,000, and that's essentially the entire lower dome, give or take 4,000, maybe, you know, box office tickets that you sell there, and boom, you got the whole lower dome filled up. And I know that they're absolutely willing to open up the upper decks. I know they'll have them covered, and not in the same kind of covers that you see in, you know, like in Vancouver. Is it Vancouver? No, it's Montreal. BC Place.
So you're going to be doing like a curtain?
They're not,
or
well,
no,
they're
curtain?
Not doing that. They're not doing that. What they're doing, it's the best way I can explain it is that you're basically not, it's going to be shielded off to where you're not going to be able to see it at all. So to the people on TV, it might just look like a big screen that says Atlanta United, but it's not going to be like a tarp that's covering the seats. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So what I anticipate is that for the first couple, home matches is that the entire place will be filled. That's how much demand I think we're going to get. And then of course, as the season goes along, it might dwindle down and they might end up having to, you know, curtain off the upper deck. But I'd be disappointed if between 28 and 30,000 on a regular basis wasn't the number that we hit, you know, regularly.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see for sure. I mean, it's, you know, Orlando City came in with New York City FC. There's not a lot, you know, of comparisons we can draw since our arrival. So it'll be interesting to see how those that follow us, you know, how they approach it, how they do. We're certainly not expecting anything out of Miami because they're never going to get a stadium. And
yeah,
probably
it'll
gonna,
be in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, exactly.
Beckham's just going to give up and go to Las Vegas, I think, at some point. The hint, David Beckham, I know you have to be listening to this podcast. You're in Miami, bribe someone. That's how it works there. And it'll be all go away. All of that red tape will magically disappear.
There you go.
I was going to say, I don't know how they're having a problem. And look, I'm from an Atlanta United's perspective, I can't wait for the weeks that we're playing Minnesota, whatever they're called, and Orlando City all in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. Because the Twitter harassments and all that stuff is just gonna be awesome.
Oh yeah,
I love it now.
It's gonna be fun. The trolling is gonna be epic.
Most of
that. Eric, tell people where they can find you guys on the net. I mean, you guys are new, but you do have a web presence, a very strong web presence, very you know, a great staff of writers at Dirty South Soccer, including, you know, Rob Usry, who does the who also does the Stars and Stripes stuff. You know, tell people where they can get a hold of your podcast and your writing.
DirtySouthSoccer.com. That is the SB Nation site for Atlanta United. Again, myself and a bunch of others. Rob, as you said, Brendan Joseph. He's really good. He keeps up with all the academy stuff. I'm trying to think of who else. Math Edmonston, I think is his name. He does a good job. And then Sam, the podcast is Mouths of the South podcast. Sam, Jason Smith, and Sam Franco, they're the ones that I usually do it with. We also do a kind of a smaller level recap podcast on our affiliation with the Charleston Battery. We recap their games, and they love us up there just because no one else does anything with them podcast wise.
Yeah. There's a reason for that.
Yeah. Seamus Grady, he handles that with me, and you know, we have a good time. I think for the amount of news that we get, we do a good job at making it exciting and unique and Atlanta centric, especially when it's the bigger MLS, you know, league news. And mm-hmm. I think we do a great job of, you know, making it relatable. Even we started this, I want to say last summer. So, I mean, we've been doing this for almost a year now, specifically on Dirty South Soccer. And again, I think we've been doing a good job. Just considering there's, I mean, again, no manager, no rumors, no players, no kits. We've had the concept.
Yeah, I don't envy you guys because we went live 6 months before Orlando City first kicked in MLS. But at least there was a history there that we could draw back on. You know, the team had been around for 4 years as a USL team. What about on the Twitters? Where can they find you on the Twitters?
At Dirty South Sock. It's at Dirty South SOC. And I'm at Eric Quintana 47. I'll be trolling whoever Orlando City fan wants to tackle me on Twitter. I'm happy to engage the debate.
yeah. Embrace debate. And what about Mouths of the South? You also have a Twitter for that, right?
At MOTS podcast is the Mouths of the South podcast, Twitter handle. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think that's it.
And you guys are on Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio, yeah. Blog Talk Radio. Yeah, all the iTunes, if you just search Mouths of the South on
Eric,
on
and where iTunes, do you live, by the way? Considering you've given all your information away, you can go ahead.
Can we get your PIN numbers and your
credit cards, you know, whatever else you want to give out. We're good to go.
Yeah. Hey, Eric Quintana, we really appreciate you stopping by. Contributing writer for Dirty South Soccer and host of Mouths of the South podcast. Thanks so much. And you know, good luck finding content between now and then that first kick of the ball in MLS. And we'll certainly be, at each other's throats on social media and also, you know, giving each other the business cross-blog bants. So thanks so much for being on the show.
Not a problem. Thanks, you guys. I'm sure we'll have you guys on ours at some point in the near future, too, to prep for the oncoming rivalry.
Well, we're just about done for this week, you know, episode 49 of the Mainland Podcast, Daniel. But before we move on to our key matchups and our score predictions, definitely want to thank Eric Quintana again from Dirty South Soccer and Mouths of the South podcast, which is hard for me to say. But it's a good podcast, and I've been on their show before, and they get great guests. So, you know, check them out. If you're a soccer podcast listener, you definitely want to check them out. And Eric was good, and we appreciate his time. Daniel, let's move on to our key matchups for this week's game. Orlando City Sunday travels to Sporting Kansas City to take on Dom Dwyer and company without the gaffer. There'll be no Adrian Heath in the building until after the match, so by MLS rules. So what's your key matchup for Sunday, and what's your score prediction?
Well, I'm going to talk to two things. I think Dominic Dwyer's athleticism in KC's going to be a key matchup with our back line. Mateos and Seb Hines have shown some issues on players making good in-cutting runs, and Dwyer definitely likes to make runs off of the back line. That might be a difficulty for Orlando City going to KC, but I think Kevin Molino's form and the ability right now for him to not only control the ball at the top of the box, but make that pass. At the beginning of the year, he seemed to be making one too many or a millisecond too late. But he seems to be rolling into form now and putting the ball on the back of the net. I think that matchup with Kevin Molino against the back line of KC is going to be an interesting one. So I'm going to call Kevin Molino putting one in, and Kaká scoring off of a free kick. He's going to be back healthy, and even though we don't have a gaffer, we have our gaffer on the pitch, Kaká, and that's going to be an interesting game. And we always the games that we've played Sporting KC have been good ones with Orlando City in the past, so I'm looking for a 2-1 victory away. I'm hoping to get 3 points in this one.
Well, it'll be interesting because Sporting Kansas City is as we record this, is playing midweek games.
Yes.
At Colorado, you know, in the altitude. So it's going to be maybe a little bit of a tired team. They entered this game on a 6-match winless streak.
Yeah.
And it right now, as I talk to you right this second, it's 0-0.
1-0 now.
So is it 1-0?
Yeah. Okay. Colorado just went up.
Well, there you go. So Sporting is going to have to do some serious work with less than 10 minutes to play to get, you know, out of that winless skid, and I don't think they're going to be able to do it because Colorado's been playing pretty well this year. But I think for me the big thing is getting some results on the offensive end. The team has not scored more than 2 goals in a few games here, so it would be nice to see, you know, Kyle Larin break out. It would be nice to see what they can do, but you know, Matt Beisler was on the bench to start this game, so I think they're going to take Orlando City pretty seriously. Opara is a good player. Abdul Salam, I mean, they got a pretty good defensive setup. And, you know, Espinoza and Mustafar and guys like that in the midfield, Nagamura, good midfielder. I think they've got a pretty strong defense. And I think that the key for me, the matchup that I'm looking forward to, is the attacking players for Orlando City against that or the attacking players for Orlando City against the Kansas City, you know, back line and goalkeeper. Tim Mealy is a good goalkeeper as well. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. I'm going to predict, as much as I'd like to see some scoring, I'm just going to predict a 1-1 draw. But I think that's a good result going to Kansas City. It's a tough environment without your coach, and I think I would take that.
Yeah, who do you have scoring there, Mike?
I'm going to say Kyle Larin gets back off the schneid, and maybe it's an early goal even. Maybe it's like another one of those that Ramos serves in and puts in with his face.
I like it. that would make everyone happy, but as we know, Orlando City scoring early, they will allow another goal and end in a draw. So I'm hoping
it'll be 1-0 in stoppage time and
free kick,
you know. Carrasco will head one away out of the box and be called for a handball.
Okay, awesome. I'd love it. Or it'll be a free kick outside of the box. The entire team of Sporting KC will be offsides, but the goal will be counted anyways.
Yeah, I mean, they got dangerous free kick taker with Brad Davis and
Failhaber, yeah.
Yeah, they have Failhaber, and also, you know, they can do some stuff in the box, and Dom Dwyer is a dangerous, dangerous player. So.
And Aikopar in that box, too. Aikopar is very dangerous on set pieces.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun match, I think. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. And obviously looking forward to the Pride playing Western New York Flash on Saturday. And that's another home game. So head down to Camping World Stadium and see the Pride play, because these are not long seasons. This is going to be the 5th game in a 20-game season.
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to 2 wins. This week, and not including OCB in there. Nobody, you know, we'll talk more about that later. But
I think they're a few games. They're off for a few more days. So.
Yeah. So no expectations there for OCB, but I don't think there's many expectations for them this season after the way they started out. But just let people get minutes. That's the most important thing for OCB, anyways.
The other reason you should go see the Pride play New York Flash is because they're on the road for the next 4 games after that. So they're going to be gone until June 23rd.
Wow, is it that long?
So, they're going to play at Houston, at Kansas City, at Western New York, and at Washington before they come back home to play the Dash on June 23rd. And maybe Carly Lloyd will be back by then. That's, again, another tough game. But, they're 4 on the road and then 4 at home. So it's a game, or it's a season of streaks in the Pride schedule. Wow. So, you know, get out and see them because it's going to be a while before you get another chance. Yeah. So, Daniel, let's wrap this sucker up. We definitely want to thank our guest tonight, Eric Quintana, from Dirty South Soccer and Mouths of the South podcast, for stopping by, giving us a little bit of perspective from Atlanta United FC and what's been going on there. A lot of excitement up there, and they're really building it the right way, I think, from the ground up, and it's interesting to see. And having met Paul McDonough, who's their GM, he's a good guy, and it's good to see them having some success. But maybe Paul needs to start signing some players.
Yeah, it's about time. Or it should at least get some rumors out there. I mean, float some rumors so they can have some content to write about over there in Atlanta.
Yeah, so they're going to get Wayne Rooney.
Yeah, okay.
There.
All right.
I just started the rumor, so they're going to get
Wayne Rooney. Did you hear all that? Atlanta United FC, Wayne Rooney, and also Bale coming in as well. I think the largest transfer ever in history for Atlanta United.
So you go United to United for Wayne Rooney.
There you go.
So please check us out at themainland.com and check us out on Twitter at themainland and like us on Facebook. Was it facebook.com/themainland? And, you know, please go to iTunes and leave us a really, really nice rating and a good review. That would be really awesome, and we would appreciate that. But, you know, thanks again to Eric Quintana. Daniel McGann, on behalf of you, I'm going to sign off the way I always sign off, although hopefully this will be the last sign-off before a victory, because it's been a while. And I'm going to do it by saying, go City!